Gaon this week. This will be week four that we're looking at Rav Hai Gaon, so I think it's time. Our last part was we were talking about his machshava, his approach to philosophical ideas, and how he was a strong rationalist, and he was a pragmatist. And we saw that in terms of his look at the issue of free will. He, addressed the question of if you kill somebody, but they would have died then anyway, so, why should there be any punishment? And he's very pragmatic. He says, because you're not supposed to do bad things. It doesn't matter what God was going to do. He also allows for the idea that sometimes people may well die, suffer, whatever it is. And it's not because Hashem felt this was just for them. It's simply the way things happen. And he sort of threw that in there. But aside from that, he says, it doesn't matter. You can't do bad things. A similarly pragmatic approach, he was asked about mazel. And the idea recorded in the Gemara that when a person is born under a certain sign, I'm not blending that with the seasons, that's its own discussion, seasons and colors here, signs there, but when you're dealing with someone born under a certain sign, they might have certain influences, he says, that doesn't dictate who they're going to be, it means they may have certain desires for certain things. That's the way he understands mazel, as we talked about last time. And then the last bit that we had done was where he talked about Agadata, when you have passages in the Gemara that explain things in Tanakh or that just present stories that are illogical, he says, don't take it literally. It's not meant to be read literally. And I wanted to show you an example of that in the first source here, where he's commenting on a passage in the Gemara that seems to describe Hashem crying. And there are passages, various ones, that anthropomorphize Hashem. We see it in Tanakh, let alone in Medrash. So he says in source number one, reading out my translation here, he says, whether from logic or from the words of sages, whether you take it as a logical point or whether it's because Chazal taught us this, there is no doubt that one cannot compare Hashem to any creature. There is no laughter, crying, groaning, tears, or pressure before him. None of that applies to God. And once that is clear, it is known that everything the sages said, which sounds like this, it sounds like Hashem is crying or laughing or whatever, was not said in its simple meaning, but as a mashal and comparison to things which are common among us as we see it. He says that's straightforward. Don't take everything you read literally. And he goes from there to talk about exaggeration sometimes in the Gemara. The Gemara will talk about a very large sum of money, or the Gemara will talk about a natural phenomenon being abnormally large. And he says, it just means it's big. It doesn't mean it should be taken literally. And, to a certain extent, you look at that and say, well, of course, but recognize that this is Rav Hai Gaon saying it. Which means you're talking about somebody 1,000 years ago, and not everybody in that era took that as a given. Rav Hai Gaon's approach won. That's the way that we tend to look at such things. But I brought you in source number two from the Aruch. We're going to be talking about the Aruch eventually, God willing. The Aruch is one of the first of the Rishonim, Rabbi Nassan, as you see, of Rome. It's a dictionary, but it's much more than a dictionary. He goes through Aramaic terms and he brings you passages from the Gemara that use those terms and he explains the passages. And because he is who he is, when he explains something in the Gemara, that gives it like halachic weight. Here, though, he's actually quoting Rav Hai Gaon. He's not making his own statement. And he makes the statement in source number two in his heading for the word guzma. Guzma means what? Exaggeration. Exactly. Guzma means exaggeration. He says, the b'choma shalo nigla bo kach, ein lomar bo kein. The sha'af b'mikro yesh lomar kein. I'm gonna say it outside of it, because I just realized that I should have included more of the text in order for it to be more explicit. But what he's saying is that even in a Tanakh, you find exaggeration when we are told, Hashem, your God, is a consuming fire. That doesn't mean that fire is your God, and that doesn't mean that God has the physical properties of fire. It means dangerous, something that you need to stay away from. And that's the way that he reads it, and that's what he says applies to Medrash as well. Clear so far?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The last point is he's a big believer in the idea that human beings don't interact with the supernatural. There are different realms. There's where we function and operate, and then there is the world that is, you know, where the angels are and whatever. And there is no interaction between people and that kind of invisible realm. Maybe there was at some point, but there isn't in our day. When I say our day, again, 11th century, 10th to 11th century is what we're talking about. But it doesn't exist. So, for example, there's something that we find in the Gemara quite a bit called Shadim. Right? What are Shadim?
Evil spirits,
demons,
ghosts.
It
could be bacteria.
Evil spirits, demons, ghosts, and could be bacteria.
So,
well, there is an idea that's attributed to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik that some of the mentions of Shadim could be viruses. They,
you didn't make that up.
No, there is. There is such an idea out there. Because the
Or
like you can't leave a water, open water in a cup. Right?
So that wasn't a shade issue, my magulim, but that wasn't an issue of shadim. That was an issue of bugs and creepy crawly things and snakes.
Overnight, what?
That's about bugs, creepy crawly things and snakes getting it. That's not about shadim. But in terms of shadim, we don't know what they are. The Gemara says a lot of different things about them. The only common denominator that you could really identify for shadim is that they are not normally visible, that they have their own minds and their own identities. They're not dictated in terms of they have to do X. They're free agents. They can run around doing different things. And they seem to have, in certain cases, conversations with human beings in the Gemara, which is spooky. There's a Gemara at the beginning of Brachos that talks about finding them by scattering ashes on the ground, and then you'll see their footprints, which, is hard with bacteria and viruses.
But also, the thing about the shadim with the door, not sleeping with your feet to the...
There's a lot of stuff out there.
Making additions to your house with that... Close window or
right, not closing up a window that existed is a whole other thing. Right. So so if you take a look at source number 3, Rav Nassan in his Aruch says, quoting Rav Haigon, Vamar Agon, Hani Mili da Amiran Bey Mishum Sakanas Mazike Davin Higi Bey. He says, when the sages say, when the Chachamim say that something shouldn't be done because of danger from Mazikin that they had among them, they're not as common now as they were then. He says, it's not a thing really among us, Rav Haigon argues. Now, we know that the Rambam was not an endorser of Shadim either. It's hard to find an explicit statement in the Rambam saying there's no such thing, but Poskim have written this for a very long time that the Rambam in fact said, no, he doesn't believe in the whole Shadim concept. It's not a thing. Gilgal is a whole different story. Gilgal, don't confuse Gilgal and Shadim. Don't confuse ghosts with Shadim either, by the way.
Oh, no?
They're not ghosts
of
people.
Confusing. No. I understand the difference between it, but is it all part of this category of things that we don't interact with anymore?
So no, Gilgal Neshamos is either Gilgal Neshamos is an on off thing. Either it's always been a part of Judaism and it's still today, or it's never been a part of Judaism, but it's something that people borrowed from other cultures and whatever, and is not, one of ours. Sajagon said it's something that got borrowed from other religions and it's not ours. On the other hand, the Zohar is full of Gilgal.
Right.
The Ari, full of Gilgal. It's not like it's, the Gemara never ever mentions it, but, that doesn't stop people from saying, okay, but it's hidden. That's why it's not being discussed. The Gemara uses the term Gilgal in 3 different ways. None of them are this. None of them are reincarnation.
Is Rav Haigon the Rambam?
So the Rav Haigon is a... Oh, you weren't here. Right. So we traced the Talmidim of Rav Haigon, and one of his paths leads to the Rif and the Rambam. Rav Haigon influences everybody.
His mode of
Yes, the Rambam is very much a student of Rav Chaim Gaon's school. Absolutely, a heavy, heavy influence. What Shei Damar is really hard to understand. There's a great quote from Rav Huttner that I have yet to meet anybody who could explain in a way that I could understand. He points out that you have a notion in Medrash that says that everything that exists in the human being exists in the universe at large. That's a basic concept. Everything that's in the human being exists. The human being is like a microcosm of the universe. And he says, this is in a personal notebook that he kept that was published after he passed away. He says, Shadim is the universe's equivalent of human imagination. I don't know what that sentence means, but it sounds very deep, no?
Mm-hmm.
It's the universe's equivalent of human imagination. It's the universe imagining something. I don't know what that means. I don't know.
It's his way of saying that it's a farce?
I don't think so, but I don't know what it means. But this is, like, Rav Chaim Gaon's approach is a very rationalist type of approach. Whatever's out there may be out there, but it's not something we interact with. So, for example, source number 4, if you remember the story at the end of Shmuel Aleph with Shaul and the Ov, right, if you remember that story, mm-hmm. Shaul is desperate because the Plishtim are attacking, and he's going to Nevi'im, and no one is talking to him, and Shmuel has passed away. And he's desperate. And so he goes to an Ov. And an Ov is a medium. Someone who says they're going to call up the spirits of those who have passed away. And the Torah says you're not allowed to do that. In very serious terms. Multiple times. And he goes to the Ov and he asks her to summon Shmuel. And she seems to successfully summon Shmuel. And Shmuel, you know, tells Shaul, you know, forget it. You're going to lose this war. It's over for you. And the Mefarshim all weigh in on what's going on in this story. Is Ov really a thing? Can you actually call up somebody who has passed away? If you can call up somebody who has passed away and Shmuel is really coming and giving advice, then why didn't the Nevi'im just answer him? Like, why did he have to go to the dead in order to get this kind of guidance?
Well,
like,
why is he doing it if you're not allowed to?
But he went
well,
inside.
That we understand.
I mean, we spent years on that.
This is, yeah, because this is... This is the end of, this is when Shaul has deteriorated. Asking that question, you should have asked that question 4 chapters earlier when he tried to kill David. That was also an honor.
He was already there with it. He was already
he's dealing with Rach Rach.
But you know, the point that if Hashem is telling you not to do it, that means that there is value in it.
So that's one school of thought. That's the Ramban school of thought. The other school of thought is the Rambam school of thought. And the Rambam says, absolutely not. There is no such thing. And the Torah prohibits it because going after that sort of thing leads you to invest in Avodah Zarah and to believe in sources other than Hashem for your guidance. The Rav Soloveitchik argued that it's because a Jew is not allowed to be foolish. It's a Chilul Hashem. That's why you're not allowed to try to communicate with the dead. But take a look at source number 4, where Radak brings you the approach of the Gaonim, and he singles out Rav Sadia and Rav Chaim Gaon. He says, Rav Sadia v'Rav Chaim HaGaonim zal amru, emes hu ki rachok hu sheteda ha'isha ha'asidus v'chein shetechaya hi es hames b'chochmas ha'ov. It's really unlikely that this woman he goes to is going to know the future and can resurrect the dead using, you know, Ov craft. Hashem, in this case, made it work because Hashem wanted this message to get to Shaul. But normally, it's a joke. And she was shocked when it actually worked. And you see it in the psukim. She's like, wait, what's going on? It didn't dawn on her that this could actually happen. It was a scam, you know, for, you know, people visiting the circus. So according to, you know, again, there are multiple schools of thought as to what Ov is. And there is. Ramban believes that Ov is a real thing. And that's why Hashem prohibits it. But, Radak, quotes Rav Chaim Gaon here to say, no, there's no such thing as talking to the dead. That's not a thing.
This is a
Not a proof of shockness. She's just talking very loud.
Hey, you can say what you want. He's Rav Chaim Gaon, you're not.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Also, why are we using what other people are saying of Chaim Gaon instead of using the original?
because most of what Rav Hai wrote were in letters. They were in Shuvos. We do have, I mean, if you go back to the recordings from the last few weeks, we talked about his books that he wrote, but a ton of his stuff comes from literally thousands of letters that he wrote, some of which we have, some of which the Radak, you know, 800 years ago had, but we may not. So, but when we get Radak in his commentary saying, Rav Hai Gaon said this, or Sadi Gaon said this, that's what we're going to
draw. Someone said the letter, they kept a copy?
So there were copies that were kept, and the Geniza has quite a bit. We have Otzar Gaonim, Tshuvos HaGaonim. If you look at number one, I brought you my translation from Tshuvos HaGaonim. Number five, I bring you from the translation from Otzar HaGaonim. Like, that's what we draw on.
No, but that's the original that was sent, and then they kept it. I'm talking about the person who wrote it, did he write it after?
Yeah, very often, yes. Very often, yes. We sometimes find references to that, yeah.
Where does the Ayin Hara fall in? Is that something totally different?
Yeah. So Ayin Hara ends up being something different because Ayin Hara has an anchor in Tanakh, meaning you have psukim that indicate something, you know, with, regarding that. With Shadim, the closest you come is the idea of Si'irim, which seemed to perhaps be a reference to Shadim. So Si'irim Yerukadu Sham and Eov, Yizbechu La Shadim Lo Eloa, right, in Parashas Ha'azinu. You have some references. I shouldn't say there are none. But
what about astrology, like today, like, you know, all that? Is that, like, considered, like, things that you should hold up near?
So, right, so you were on the phone last time, so I don't know if you could hear it well. But what you said then is that in their day, astrology was considered science.
Right.
That was considered to be like, this is the way the world works.
Today we don't view it as science.
Correct.
So it would be...
Well, even when it was science, it would be prohibited. In other words, you're not allowed to pursue guidance for the future, calculating omens and special times and so on, because tamim tiyem Hashem alokecha, you're supposed to rely on God. That's Ramban's major pitch. That's one of his major themes.
But according to the Rambam, you just say, like, do what you want. But
so the Rambam is not a believer in astrology either, as I recall. I seem to remember that the Rambam is not a believer in astrology either. Not that he believes that there are no powers out there. He does. The Rambam was a believer in the idea of spheres within spheres and that kind of cosmology where there are, you know, intelligent entities that are somehow embodied in the celestial bodies. But nonetheless, I don't believe he's an astrology believer.
But if he's not a believer, does that make a difference in terms of what he would say, like, for people who want to read into it? Or like,
no, because he would still say the Torah prohibits it because it leads us away from consulting with Hashem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So a remarkable example of this is the story of the Arba Shenechnesu LePardes. The Gemara in the second parak of Chagiga tells the story of four Chachamim led by Rabbi Akiva, right? It's Rabbi Akiva, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, and Elisha Ben Avuya, I think, who go into Pardes. And Pardes literally is an orchard. It's some kind of mystical experience is what it looks like. In which they are up in the heavens and see all sorts of strange things, and it's a very dangerous thing to do. Only Rabbi Akiva emerges unscathed. So the Rambam has his own view of what was going on in the Pardes passage, but take a look at Rav Hai Gaon in number 5. He says, they didn't go up to Shamayim. V'lo hein olin lamarom. They weren't going up to the heavens. Ela bechadre libam roin vitzofin. In their hearts, they saw, they envisioned ka'adam haroa vitzofe be'enav, like somebody who sees with his eyes, davar barur, seeing something clear. Vishomen va'omer numedabrin, they hear, they speak. Ke'en ha'socha beruach ha'kodesh, like one who sees with divine inspiration. So what they were doing was introspective. They weren't going anywhere. They weren't going up to heavens. They were having some kind of inspiration from Hashem. The last one in number 6 is about miracles and the ability of tzaddikim to perform miracles. And he says, Kach ra'inu ki yesh b'she'ela zu kama inyanim. There are different pieces to this question that he's been asked about miracles. Mehem ra'uyan l'tshuva, mehem tonos v'taskufin v'alilos u'dvarm she'enen kedai. Some of it is worth answering, some of it, nah. Kigon, ma shekasavnu aleichem ba'avur divrei havai shekasavtem eleinu kvar. Like what we wrote to you about the empty things that you sent to us about already before. He says some things are just empty, some things are not worth dealing with, some things are worth answering. Kiyesh kama shemos, sheyasa behem ma'asim gedolim shlo yitachin la'adam la'asosan ela bederach os omofes. You wrote to me saying that there are names, meaning names of God, that people can use in order to perform deeds that should be impossible. Right? You wrote, he's a Rav Haigon is saying to his, you know, correspondent, you told me, asking me my opinion, that you've heard that there are names of Hashem that people can use. I learned that as a kid, right? In summer camp, they said, oh yeah, no, there's the 72-letter name of Hashem, and people can say that, and they can fly, and they can heal people, and, you know, so on and so forth. So his answer is, Veheshavnu, we answered, ki elu v'chayotze b'hem devarim b'telim. This and things like this are all empty. Nah. V'tamatem, and you expressed shock when I said that. Achshav b'sheila zu, when you wrote to me now with your question, ki kama mechachmei eretz Edom ve'eretz Yisrael, because many sages, or some sages, I don't know how many kama is, right? When someone says to you, a number of people have been saying, you know, that you could be one. But he says, some of the sages from Rome and some of the sages from Eretz Yisrael, anashim chachamim, chaveirim, v'ne'emanim, sages, they're chaveirim, they're trusted people, magidim kirozos beferhesia, they saw it. So how can you tell me, Rav Hai, that this is nonsense? So he says, I'm not sure who you're shocked at here. Mimenu or mehem? Are you shocked at me or are you shocked at them? Imehem tamatem kach ra'oi. If you're shocked at them, that's a good reaction. Right? Rav Hai told you can't be. So, you know, chachmei Rome, chachmei Eretz Yisrael, you know, you have a problem. V'imlav, but if not, if you're shocked at me, ki me'achar sh'amad b'libcham ki nasa b'shem ma'asim sh'lo ye'asu ala osa mofeis, you really believe that deeds that shall not be done, miracles, these things have been performed, b'meta kiru osos shal nevi'im mimasha ediotos osin b'shem u'mayiyah hefresh bein navi u'bein zu laso. He says, if you really believe that Chachamim in our day, the 11th century, are performing miracles like this, he says, what are you going to do when a Navi comes along? How are you going to be able to tell the difference between a Navi and the people in your day? Do you think that your peers are Nevi'im, that they're able to do such things? Don't believe everything you hear, is his reaction. He says, yeah, they're telling you that there are such things, but I don't buy it. That's Rav Hai's position. Clear? Sorry, because I know people hear stories about miracle workers and such, but Rav Hai is very much not on board. It's funny, I just, I did a mini-series on icons of Jewish Morocco, the different leaders of Moroccan Jewry from different periods, and I did one on the Baba Sali, which I really knew nothing about coming in, so I had to do a lot of learning. That's spooky, huh? So I did a lot of reading about the Baba Sali, and it's true, they tell a whole lot of stories, you know, about all sorts of things. Yeah. But Rav Haigon would say, that's not my problem, that's your problem.
If you want to believe something, there is always a way to, like, take information and have it suit your narrative.
Yes.
That's
true.
School of thought. It's a mystical school of thought, and it's a
radical school of thought. I feel like there's not branch from here, clearly.
Yeah.
You know, like, or the Litvish or whatever. I don't know, however you want to call it. I'm not familiar with the other type, but
right.
I think that's where
it's true.
It's the approach.
He's not calling anybody a kofi.
You do.
He's kind of like, this isn't my issue. I'm going to leave me out of it.
Yeah, no, he's not, look, he said, I told you what I told you. You wrote back to me, I don't know why.
I think that if you have that mindset.
Telling me that the rabbis in Rome reported this isn't going to change my mind.
But is he saying because nowadays, like, I forgot where you told me that he said that you need to today it doesn't exist anymore.
The Shadim, he says, aren't around so much.
Right, so does that mean that he believes that maybe more, like,
the rational?
Before
I don't know.
I
wonder the same thing.
Right? Like, did he think that Kriyas Yamsuf was a miracle, or it was like some sort of natural phenomenon?
I don't think he's questioning Kriyas Yamsuf in any way.
Uh-huh.
So he's talking about human. He believes that Nevi'im are going to do miracles. Yeah. He just doesn't believe that this is something that someone is performing in the 11th century.
Right, so there's like a certain cutoff for him where
yes.
he feels like miracle.
A Navi
like
can do things. Yeah, a Navi can do things. I can't.
What about
That's
all the
same.
Magic that we always learn about that was like in Mitzrayim? Was that like...
So there's a lot of debate about that, about how to understand what the Egyptian magicians were doing. There are midrashim that say the Egyptians were doing what's called achizas einayim. They were fooling people into thinking they were doing something that they weren't actually doing. No, they didn't make
kinnim.
No, they couldn't.
There
was an article that came out
that
gave some sort of
sign that was just like they were very good
at. There are lots of writers who over time have tried to do that. There was a science writer named Emmanuel Velikovsky who wrote books about this, about Yetzias Mitzrayim and all the different things that happened and how it could be explained by a confluence of influences from different planets. And it was a big deal in the 50s.
From Guy?
No. Jewish, but not from. As far as I know, I shouldn't say that. Maybe he was. Now I've like condemned him. There is no getting to a definitive answer because, as has been said, there are different camps on this. You know, the Rugachever is quoted as saying that when the Rambam said there are no shadim, they cease to exist. Because the Rambam said there are no shadim, so therefore they can't exist. I think that's the Rugachever it's attributed to. But this I can't answer for you. But this is what Rav Hai Gon establishes as Torah. That's what he's putting out.
Whatever he said sort of went amongst all sects at the time, or there were like significant camps of Jewish religious people living at the time who didn't believe in his thoughts.
So that's a good question. He is definitely dominant in Surah. That's his yeshiva. He's definitely dominant as a Gaon to the extent that thousands and thousands of people are writing questions to him and he is answering them. They clearly expect, you know, Shmuel HaNagid, we talked about last week, is the head of the Jewish community that's growing at that time in Spain, and he considers Rav Hai Gon his Rebbe. At the same time, we know that 100 years later, 200 years later in Spain, you will find plenty of people who are seriously into mysticism that Rav Hai Gon would have completely dismissed. So,
much later.
Yeah, but it comes from somewhere. Yeah, yeah. That's my answer, I guess, to it. So what I want to do is next time. Actually, I was thinking next time maybe doing a Purim shiur. We'll see. We'll figure that out. Maybe Purim and Parsha. But when we continue with Giants of. I want to talk about the bridge between the Gaonim and the Rishonim, why the yeshivos fall apart, which is something we've talked about a little bit anyway, and some of the key figures who lead us to the period of the Rishonim. So I want to talk about Rabbi Nassim Baal HaAruch as one example. There are a few. I want to talk about Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom will take us a little while because there's a lot to say about Rabbeinu Gershom. I want to talk about Shmuel HaNagid in Spain. Before we get to some of the figures who are really familiar, like Rashi and people like that, but you need the bridge era in order to get
what
there.
What are they called, those things that you mentioned?
Usually they get called early Rishonim. I don't think there's a name for the era, not that I'm familiar with.
Okay.
Yeah, the ones in the middle. I don't know. Okay? All right, let's do Parsha.
I don't want to think of her.